You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You turn to WPR every day knowing you can find connection, knowing you can find companionship when you need it most. The programs you count on, they're powered by listeners just like you. And I want to tell you that we are in our spring member drive, and you play a vital role in funding the programs you're passionate about. So whatever your reason for giving, in-depth news, interesting conversations, the inspiring music, this spring member drive is your time to support the service you rely on. Make your gift at 888-202-2552. Again, that's 888-202-2552 or WPR.org. And thank you so much for your support today. Right now, we have an elections recap. Results were released yesterday for a hotly contested state Supreme Court race. You heard the results there in newscast. Presidential primary, other local elections held last week despite fears from the coronavirus and a flurry of last-minute legal wrangling. So how do you feel? How do you feel about the results of the April 7th election? We're at 800-642-1234 through the hour. We have J.R. Ross, editor of wispolitics.com. He's been covering Wisconsin government and politics, revealing his age here for 20 years. J.R., welcome back to the Ideas Network.
How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. I'd have to put you in your place right away there. So let's look at turnout first. Democrats pushed for postponing last week's election because of the pandemic. How did voter turnout end up?
It's actually pretty good. We're at north of 1.5 million people right now. Now, the final results aren't in. We're waiting on the last few precincts. But to put that in perspective, in 2016, we had about 2 million votes cast in the Supreme Court race. Now, that year, we had both Republican and Democratic primaries for president that were hotly contested that helped drive turnout. 2011, we had Supreme Court race become a proxy fight over Act 10, essentially. That was just north of 1.5 million. So we're in pretty good shape in terms of numbers. Now, the caveat is I went into this race, and I'm really a little bit of a geek when it comes to numbers, when it comes to turnout.
I know you are.
But I was looking, at about 1.7 million as my benchmark. And the reason why I say that is last year, the Supreme Court race, Brian Hagedorn, the conservative, had what was considered a surge of conservative support and got to 606,000 votes. In the primary for president for Democrats in 2016, they're like 1.1 million votes. So I was guessing, without a really contested primary for president on the Republican side, about 1.7 was my benchmark. Now, the caveats to that number are, the takeaways are, we ended up not having college kids on campus for a last-minute turnout drive from something like a Bernie Sanders. The Dem primary had kind of fizzled out a great deal before people went to the polls on Tuesday. And the much more dramatic impact, right, COVID-19, how this race was conducted in the middle of a public health emergency. So all in all, pretty good turnout by Wisconsin voters last week.
The big question mark, though, is the whole absentee ballot thing. State election officials reported, you know, nearly 1.3 million absentee ballots were requested. Do we know how many ballots weren't delivered and how many were ultimately returned to election clerks?
The last update I got from the commission was yesterday morning, and I haven't gone back to look yet to see if they have a new one this morning yet, but we were at like around, I think, 10, 12,000 that were listed as not being mailed. Now, another caveat, sometimes there's a lag between what local clerks collect and then report to that reporting system, so we may be off a little bit in terms of that, but we're about 1.1, just shy of 1.1 million returned. What's also unique is that if you go back and look at past elections, like the 2016, both the spring and the fall, absentee ballots, you know, were mostly cast in person for those that were turned in. This year, the vast majority, I know the final number yet, are going to be mailed in. It is a very unique election in that regard. It was largely conducted by mail. We're not used to that in Wisconsin. So comparisons are difficult, but the return rate is around 85, upper 80s percent as of yesterday. I'm waiting for the final numbers to see what it turned out to be like, but that still, and because the race wasn't that close, we may not get the number of lawsuits we've gotten otherwise, but there are all kinds of questions about the people who the postmark question, right?
Mm-hmm.
The U.S. Supreme Court said as long as it's postmarked by April 7th, see by the 13th, you're fine. Well, we now know that some of them weren't postmarked with a date. What would have happened with those? What about the ones, the people who remember the Thursday before the election, a federal judge in Madison said, hey, if you're afraid of getting a witness signature on your ballot, you can put an affidavit in your ballot that says, I don't feel safe. I didn't get a signature because of this, and you're fine. 28 hours later, an appeals court in Chicago overturned that. The State Elections Commission said because that was overturned, like it never happened. So how many voters do you have that in that situation where they sent their ballot in with that affidavit, but they couldn't go fix their ballot? There are all kinds of issues like that that we may never get the total answer to. Again, because the race wasn't close, there may not be as much of an incentive to go to court and plow through these things. The flip side, though, however, is this is just a taste of what November could be like in Wisconsin. If we are really the tipping point, the presidential election, if it's like this come October, November, it could get really messy really quickly.
We're discussing the results amid the pandemic of the April 7th elections. Our guide is J.R. Ross, editor of WisPolitics.com. Your reaction to election results, welcome throughout the hour at 800-642-1234. How do you feel about the state Supreme Court race and Judge Jill Karofsky's win? Who did you cast your ballot in favor of? How did you cast your ballot during the April 7th election? Call in. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. JR, let's look at absentee voting around the state. What parts of the state had the highest levels and what had the lowest levels?
Well, if you look at like comparison to last year's Supreme Court race, we had communities such as Milwaukee County, Dane, I believe, Waukesha, a couple others that they had more absentee ballots returned, just absentee ballots returned, than they had votes cast in last year's Supreme Court race. Now, part of that is the presidential primary for president, right, helped drive things. In Milwaukee County, you also had a race for mayor of Milwaukee and a county executive race. Those helped drive turnout in Milwaukee and help push it to that position. I think there were half a dozen counties, give or take, that got roughly around the number of absentee ballots returned as they had cast in last year's race. So that was fairly impressive. Again, that dynamic of having a largely mail-in ballot, unlike past years. Mm-hmm. Other places that had fewer cases of COVID-19, more rural areas, weren't nearly as aggressive with the absentee ballots. I'm looking at a chart that Charles Franklin put together. He's a professor at Marquette, does the Marquette University Law School poll. Menominee County, 17.7% of the 2019 turnout Supreme Court race. That's how many absentee ballots they sent in. Pepin County, 25.2%. Clark, 31.4%. So we're talking more rural areas had a much lower usage of absentee ballots compared to a Milwaukee, Kenosha, Waukesha, Dane, Racine. Those are the tops in terms of that proportion compared to last year.
We have WisPolitics editor J.R. Ross as our guide to election results. The April 7th election was marked by this explosion, as we're talking about, in absentee balloting, long lines of voters also braving health risks and stay-at-home orders. So how did you participate in last week's election? What do you think of the results 1 week later? What legal challenges are you watching for? What do you want to be tracked down? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We'll return in just a minute with J.R. Ross right here on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We're in a primary elections recap for the hour with WisPolitics editor J.R. Ross as our guide. As we've been talking about, a record high, nearly 1.3 million absentee ballots were requested for the April 7th election. Some residents who requested absentee ballots said they never received them. All absentee ballots had to be hand-delivered or postmarked by last Tuesday. So 1 week later, how do you feel about the results? Do you agree with Republicans who opposed postponing? Or do you agree with Democrats who pushed for extending election deadlines? What do you make of the partisan rancor here? We're at 800-642-1234. And journalist J.R. Ross of Wispolitics stays with us. Let's take a call now. Tom is joining us from Port Wing this morning. Hi, Tom.
Hey, good morning. You know, Wisconsin followed the Constitution as the state Supreme Court and the United States Supreme Court and the Republicans said they should. But the DNC's Tom Perez claimed that this would be the greatest disenfranchisement of voters. When the Democrats win, it seems like disenfranchisement arguments go away. When they lose, it seems to be a major event. What does your guest think about the idea that disenfranchisement is really a one-sided argument?
JR, what do you make of that disenfranchisement, the ebb and flow of that based on the results?
Well, I often say nobody cares about my opinion. I only care what I can report. And what I can tell you is that Democrats feel like there is an effort, generally speaking, to try and make it more difficult to vote than it should be. And Republicans have countered over and over again that these things they put in place are about making it hard to cheat but easy to vote, to use their words. What happened this week, last week, was just unheard of. And I mean, nothing I've ever seen before. Nobody I've ever talked to has seen something like this with how this race played out. And there are a couple of things I thought talking about were key in how it progressed. One was that Governor Evers did not call weeks ago for delay in the election. If he had, let's say he had 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago said, okay, things are getting a little bit difficult out there, we should push back that election, it would have changed the discussion dramatically. I'm not saying that for sure that Republicans would have embraced it and pushed it back. There's a much different discussion than what happened, which is what the governor at first kept saying, we can do this election safely if you do it mostly by, you know, if you don't feel safe, ask for an absentee ballot. Then he shifted, said, okay, we should go to an all-mail-in election. And then just the Friday before the election said we should push this back. Totally different discussion than what it would have been otherwise. Republicans, meanwhile, they kept embracing what Evers was saying about we can do this safely. Also, don't forget, Republicans, generally speaking, represent more rural areas in Wisconsin that don't have nearly the hot spots that a Milwaukee has or a Madison has. So they aren't seeing the same kind of impact in their home communities or feeling the same kind of threat from COVID-19 that others are. That played into discussion. And then you go to the court system and what happened there. I mean, it's just a totally different situation. And if you were a voter, I mean, think about it. If you were somebody trying to follow this, if you're not a junkie like I am about following court decisions, read them on the weekends, how did you keep track of the way this progressed from a district court decision, the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, the U.S. Supreme Court, and a state Supreme Court decision, all within the span of 4 or 5 days? That was a lot for people to kind of go through.
And certainly the information that they might be given, even in the mailings, maybe even in their absentee ballot mailing. I mean, I looked at the wording in mine. It didn't reflect, you know, the latest hour in the recent hours of information that was being sent, you know, that was changing due to the court decisions.
Yeah, I mean, I have complete sympathy for the casual voter who was trying to figure out what was going on with this election and how to act in regard to what was put out there. And again, there are some people, there's a group of people I really feel for in this election, and that is the ones who did that affidavit saying that they didn't feel safe getting a witness signature on their ballot and sent it in because of the Judge Conley decision, and then found out 26 hours later, roughly, that didn't count anymore. And usually it's called a spoiled ballot in Wisconsin, where there's an issue with your ballot, you can usually go fix it. Because of that unique situation,
those voters couldn't go fix their ballot. If they want to turn out on election day and go to the poll and ask for a new ballot, they couldn't do that. They were out of luck because of how that court really played out. Now, I don't know how many people were affected by that. Really don't. We won't know until all things are kind of done, maybe weeks or months from now. But how do you tell somebody who made no mistake, did nothing wrong on his or her own, your vote just doesn't count because of the way you did things because you followed a judge's decision?
We're talking about the April 7th election results with J.R. Ross from WisPolitics. Getting your reaction along the way to the results, to the balloting during the pandemic at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Laura now in Shorewood. Hi, Laura.
Hi.
What's on your mind?
I'm just two things. One is I'm a healthcare worker. I'm a nurse and I work in a hospital right now. So my number one focus is health and public safety. And I don't think that it was a good idea to hold the election as scheduled. And I've never missed voting for an election. I did request an absentee ballot. My husband and I both did within minutes of each other. He received one. I did not. So that did force me to go into the polling place at the last minute. I was hoping that it would come in the mail the last day or two, and that it was just going to arrive late. It never did arrive, so I did end up going to cast my vote, but I felt upset that my ballot did not come in the mail.
Yeah.
And I feel bad for people who are isolated at home, who maybe live alone, who don't have a chance to have a witness signing their ballot for them. But number one for me is public health and public safety, and I think that was a terrible idea to have people come out during a pandemic,
Laura,
and
yeah,
risk their lives to vote.
Laura, thank you for your call. Breaking up there, her call at the beginning. Laura is a nurse, and her spouse received his absentee ballot, JR, but Laura did not, and had to go to her polling place.
She's not alone. We now know that there were several bins of ballots, for example, that were not delivered, that were found at a postal facility in Wisconsin. It looks like it impacted people in the Oshkosh area. Gordon Hintz, who's the minority leader for the assembly for Democrats, he didn't get his ballot in the mail that he requested. He said March 24th or 5th-ish, give or take a few days, maybe earlier than that. He didn't get his ballot. He ended up not voting, not going to the polls because of his kind of worries about COVID-19. It underscores the challenges of this election and how it was conducted. Again, there are various mistakes that were made in terms of how this was all done. But if discussion had been different earlier on, it may have changed how this progressed. Also, we're not used to having this many absentee ballots cast in Wisconsin election. I mean, we're talking about an election that I can't wait for the final numbers to see just how much it was a mail-in election versus an in-person election and how much that's flipped from a normal year. Also, going back to the courts and the role they played, the U.S. Supreme Court, it was asked basically to address this. You know, what about these ballots? People aren't getting a ballot. So you're supposed to postmark it by April 7th, have a count on it by April 13th. What if you don't get your ballot? And this majority opinion from the conservatives was largely, look, this is no different than any other election where you ask for a ballot late and don't get it. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, writing for the minority in that decision, basically said that was a mind-boggling point of view, asking how can you cast a ballot you don't get? It goes back to that question about disenfranchisement. What do you do for those folks who did nothing wrong but didn't get their ballot in time through no fault of their own?
Let's bring in Brad now in Lake Geneva. Hi, Brad.
Hi. I think the big tipping point was when all of the poll workers decided it was unsafe to open the polls, and the number of polling stations decreased from a matter of hundreds to a single.
Oh, I'm sorry, Brad. We just lost him. But Brad is saying that, you know, the tipping point was when poll workers decided it was unsafe to open the polls. And there we saw, JR, the National Guard step in.
Yeah. And now look at the experience of a Milwaukee versus a Madison. Milwaukee went from having 180 polling sites down to 5. Madison has usually had, I think, 92 down to 66-ish. I did not see long lines in Madison. You did not see those same images of people in line wearing masks for hours on end in Madison, you saw in Milwaukee. Now, Mayor Tom Barrett of Milwaukee, Mayor Eric Genrich up in Green Bay, who went from 30-some spots down to 2, they made a decision based off the number of poll workers they thought they had before it became clear to them, at least, how many National Guard members would be available to help. If they had, maybe if that combination had been made earlier or there was better communication, they could have opened more polling sites. That said, that's one of these multiple failures this election that rests with the local officials. They made a choice to do that, and people I talked to said, look, you can't compare what happened in Milwaukee to Madison because Madison, we didn't have the problem. Now, we will not know for some time what the impact of in-person voting is going to be on the COVID-19 cases in Wisconsin. I am not a doctor. Don't pretend to be one. But we are all going to be watching to see Milwaukee is a hotspot. Does it get worse after the experience of voting there? What about Madison, where you didn't have the long lines, you had more polling sites open? What's that experience going to be? And that's going to be studied, I'm sure, for a long time to see how this is spread and what the impact is of in-person voting during a pandemic like this.
We have WisPolitics editor J.R. Ross as our guide to election results, the fallout after the spring primary 1 week ago. With your insights, 800-642-1234. Back after this news update on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. Just want to say listener support is the largest source of funding for Wisconsin Public Radio, and that is very powerful. You make a difference. This spring member drive, support the programs you value. Please give, and here's the number to make your gift. It's 888-202-2552, or go to WPR.org. And thank you so much for your support. Right now, we're getting an election recap. Voting by mail is certain to be a big historical marker for last week's election. It's certain to account for a sizable majority of all votes in the spring election that was conducted with this bitter dispute in the courts and in the legislature, all in the middle of a pandemic. Do you think that the voting restrictions from the pandemic invalidate the results, or do you think the results are legitimate and should stand as is? Would you support a mail-only election in the future? Join in 800-642-1234. We have WisPolitics editor J.R. Ross for the hour as our guide. JR, let's get to some results already. We had to talk so much about process, which is really important, but let's look at the Supreme Court race where Judge Jill Karofsky defeated Justice Daniel Kelly in the statewide election for a 10-year term. This was the first time an incumbent justice has lost since 2008. What does that outcome mean for the political leanings on the court?
A couple key things. One, it takes it from a 5-2 conservative majority down to 4-3. For liberals, equally as important, it means in 2023, control of the court will be back up for grabs. That year, Chief Justice Pat Rogensack, who turns 80 in July, been about another 10-year term. So there's some question if she's going to run again. That's, if you're liberal, that's your chance. Conservatives took over the court majority in 2008, I believe, and have held it ever since. Now, if you go back to last year, liberals had hoped that this was the year they would take control of the court, because remember, Lisa Neubauer was considered a significant lead in that election last year to hold a 4-3, hold the conservatives at 4-3, but she lost that race to Hagedorn, which pushed it back up, gave conservatives some breathing room, especially in light of facing the prospect of a contested Democratic primary for president without really a Republican one. So long term, it puts the 2023 race firmly on the map. That is going to be a fierce battle. I mean, if things go as is, you know, nothing changes, nobody leaves the court, you know, as appointment of a replacement appointed, that is going to be a battle royale for that court because it's so important. I mean, think about the decisions released in the last few years on things like lame duck session from late 2018, Governor Walker's Act 10. Now, this is still going to mean a conservative majority next year if this court gets redistricting. Why is that important? Well, barring Republicans getting to two-thirds majorities in both houses of the legislature, we expect Republicans to pass a map that would be in place for the next decade, Governor Evers to veto that map, and then it'd be a court battle, whether it's going to play out in the state Supreme Court or in the federal courts. If you go to the state Supreme Court, if you're a Republican, you feel pretty good because you still have that majority on the bench you think you're going to have a more friendly environment next year than you would in the federal courts.
Purging voter rolls might be another case that would be for what would be for before this court.
Oh, absolutely. And don't forget now, Justice Kelly had stayed off of a couple of cases because they were going to impact potentially his race, right? Kelly did not participate originally in that case about the voter rolls. What will he do now? There's still an opportunity for him to get back on that case. That would bolster the conservative majority on that. Because remember, Brian Hagedorn, a conservative, didn't want to take that case directly originally when it was asked the Supreme Court. Part of the thought, though, was that he was an old appeals court judge, wanted to go through the appeals court before it came to the Supreme Court. It has gone through that process now. So how is that going to play out? That's going to be a key one just in this term before Kelly leaves. So there are significant issues for that court in the next few months that are going to impact the November election.
Which counties, as you look at outcomes, which counties were critical in the outcome of this election?
Really, if you look at the map, there was a shift leftward across the state. I mean, one of my colleagues forwarded me a graphic that somebody put together last night of just looking at last year's Supreme Court race, which was decided by 6,000 votes, to this week's Supreme Court race. That was about more than 10-point spread, 11 points. It looks like, except for a couple of pockets, everything looks more blue than it was a year ago. Now, again, part of that's because of the presidential primary. That helped drive turnout. But you're talking Kroski won, for example, in the Fox Valley. I believe she won a couple of counties that usually lean Republican. One of my key counties I always look at is Kenosha County. Not because not just because I was born there, but because it's a swingy county in statewide races. Last year, Hagedorn won that county. Yesterday, I think last time I checked, Kroski was up by like a dozen, 15 points. It just kind of exemplifies that everything looked more blue. And again, I get the impression part of that was because of the presidential primary. Yes, Donald Trump backed Daniel Kelly. Yes, he tweeted support for him and encouraged his backers to go out and vote for him, but there really wasn't a threat to Donald Trump on the ballot. It underscores the thought that Trump doesn't drive turnout unless it's about Trump. If he were on the ballot and had a real race, probably would have been a different story for Kelly, but Republicans in Wisconsin made a decision a few months back not to put anybody else on that ballot besides Trump. I don't know that would have made a difference, but it sure didn't help Kelly to not have anything really going on in that GOP primary last week.
We're talking about the results of the April 7th elections. Our guide is J.R. Ross, editor of WisPolitics.com, and you can weigh in. Are you a Milwaukee voter? Who did you support last week in the elections for county executive and mayor? Are you happy with the results of the election? Join in at 800-642-1234. Let's bring in Joan now, who's joining us from Eau Claire this morning. Hi, Joan.
Good morning. I'm really pleased that Joe Kroski was able to persevere in light of all the voter suppression attempts on the part of the Republicans. I'm really impressed with her anti-corruption theme, and I know she's for voting rights and against voter suppression, and I know that she's against the gerrymandering that we have to deal with in Wisconsin here, the egregious gerrymandering. So I'm grateful, but it's a poignant victory because of people putting their health at risk and perhaps their very lives in order to cast their ballot. And that's my comment. Thank you so much for allowing me to speak.
Joan, thank you for the call. JR, the two candidates, Kroski and Kelly, were starkly different on what they supported and their issues.
Yeah, and your caller brought up a really interesting point about Kroski's kind of campaign on the quote-unquote corruption on the court. Before COVID-19 basically took up all the oxygen in Wisconsin in terms of news coverage, that race was marked by a series of shots that Kroski took at Kelly, saying essentially that he was so beholden to conservatives that when conservative groups walked into the courtroom, he was already on their side. And it amounted to corruption. That resulted in Chief Justice Pat Rogensack and Annette Ziegler, both conservatives who had not publicly endorsed Kelly, but we all think supported him, chiding Kroski for her language, saying it was hurtful to court. Kelly had knocked her several times, saying she owed the court an apology because she wasn't attacking him with her slander and his words, but she was attacking the court. But conservative justices Rebecca Bradley and Brian Hagedorn They went a step further. They both publicly endorsed Kelly. They said at the time her comments, Carrasi's comments, showed she was not fit for the court, to use their words. And I called Hagedorn and Bradley last night to ask, okay, after all this, where are you guys at? Because Karofsky, in her comments to reporters last night, said she looks forward to meeting with her new colleagues, sit down over a cup of coffee or a good Wisconsin beer, and basically hashing things out and getting past this. Hagedorn said that he kind of a conciliatory tone that, you know, he's going to miss Kelly's work ethic and intelligence, but he welcomed Karofsky to the court, so he looked forward to working with her. Bradley, however, said that she stood by her comments and called Karofsky last night in my conversation with her, quote, a political actor who is not fit to stay in the state's highest court. Now, Bradley was a huge backer of Kelly's, so there may be some of the sting of that loss fresh, but it goes to show you that this is not going to be an easy transition, and there's going to be some tension on the court, which, quite frankly, has had struggles over the last decade, 15 years, with those tensions. It's been ugly in the court at times. It really has not been a pleasant place to be, and it'll be interesting to watch how these justices work together after the way this campaign played out and what's going to happen going forward.
Yeah, so how could those tensions play out in the decisions and what they take up as a high court?
Good question. Another one for Karofsky. She got $1.3 million in transfers from the State Democratic Party. She has said that she will not sit on cases involving the State Democratic Party to avoid appearance of corruption. Now, I don't know if she said how long that will last because it's a 10-year term. So is it the first year, 2 years? Like, at what point does she say, okay, I'm good to sit on these again? But that would take one liberal vote away from some key cases, possibly. And I'm not sure what exactly the state party would be involved in, but that could impact some things going forward. Another thing to watch with how her term plays out.
What was their campaigning like as the pandemic ramped up? Did the campaigns end up spending more on advertising because they couldn't go door to door? I know I got like handwritten postcards in my mailbox.
Yes. There were handwritten postcards by people. There were a lot of digital ads. I went and looked late last week. Outside groups were at about $5 million in spending that I could count. Now, the state requires you, if you're a group that does an independent expenditure, which basically is, it's an ad that expressly calls for the election to feed of somebody. They call them the magic words. Support, vote for, oppose, vote against, those things. And I could track filings with the state about those ads. I also had sources who gave me some other numbers on spending from issue ads. Those are ones that say, you know, Joe Blow is a horrible person. Call Joe Blow and tell him how bad he is, right? Mm-hmm. I had about $5 million in ads, $5 million in outside spending through last week in the race. Add in the candidates and what they spent. We're going to be north of $9 million is all said and done, which exceeds last year's race, which around $8 million for the candidates and the outside groups.
We're talking with Wispolitics editor J.R. Ross about what came to pass in the April 7th election. We're spending the hour on returns and what they mean for the state Supreme Court, what they mean for mayor of Milwaukee, and a few thousand other local offices around Wisconsin. So what are your final thoughts on this election? Did the election turn out as you expected? 800-642-1234. We'll return in just a moment here on the Ideas Network. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. In the words of Craig Gilbert, who is a longtime political reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel, he said it this way: the state has undergone an extremely rapid, painful, bitter, and messy leap to absentee voting. More battles are coming over how to make that process fairer and more credible, end quote. Still time for your thoughts. How would you make the process fair and more credible? What are your final takeaways from April 7? How do you plan on voting in the next election? Still time for you at 800-642-1234. J.R. Ross of Wispolitics stays with us for another 10 minutes. Let's take another call now. Marty is with us from Madison. Hi, Marty.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I want to ask your guest about the reasons for justifying the election. They say that the terms of office of the elected officials were going to expire shortly after the election, so that made it a lot different than other states, which only had primaries. You know, Mitch McConnell held up the Supreme Court pick for a year. Why couldn't we have held up our election for a month or whatever?
Marty, thank you for the call. JR, why couldn't the legislature intervene here and extend some terms?
Well, they could have. And actually, Governor Evers, when he kept calling for the election to go forward and to, if you didn't feel safe, ask for an absentee ballot, he kept citing that factor as well about the local officials. A lot of these offices, the changeover is like in 2 or 3 weeks, something like that. So his concern, and when the Republicans expressed, was that what do you do with those offices? Now, Governor Evers, in his executive order, which is overturned on Monday, last Monday, he added a provision to deal with those, basically extend. He would have extended the terms of those who are currently in office until this is all wrapped up, and said that you don't get any extra time on the back end of the new people. You just have this kind of transition period where you stay in office until election is over. Try to address that, but it would have required a state action by the legislature to put that in place. He didn't have the power to do it on his own through executive order, according to the Supreme Court. So that was an issue. And again, if they tried to have a discussion about it earlier, maybe it would have been different, but that was one of the factors in why this election went on the way it did.
Well, let's turn our attention to the race for the Democratic nomination here. What is the battle looking like as you saw returns for Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders?
Biden was at 63% last count. Now there's a couple precincts out yet in the state, handful here and there. But it was like a more than 2-to-1 win, or roughly 2-to-1 win for Biden over Sanders. A couple of interesting things about that. I went and looked. I counted about 924,000 votes cast in the Dem primary for president, about 856,000 votes for Karofsky, about 628,000 votes in the Republican primary, which is Trump on the ballot, about 693,000 votes for Kelly. So it shows you the impact of the presidential race on the Supreme Court contest. What was interesting with the Dem primary is this race was basically already over before we got to Wisconsin. Really fascinating how that primary changed so dramatically from Bernie winning, well, tying in Iowa, winning New Hampshire, winning Nevada, and all of a sudden things flipping from South Carolina on. But even still, you still got a pretty good turnout in that primary for a race that really wasn't happening. And you didn't have an opportunity for Sanders to go out and rally college kids. If you go back to 2016, one reason why we thought that Sanders had a good chance in Wisconsin against Clinton was the size of his rally. He was drawing 10,000 people to a rally, and getting good turnout on college campuses. Think about this stay-at-home order. The college campuses were closed. College kids went home. You didn't have that opportunity to go through UW-Madison, for example, with the organizers and rally kids last minute, getting to register at the polls and turn out and vote. So it probably hampered the Sanders effort. But really, it was, for all intents and purposes, already done before Wisconsin. It just, the dynamics of this election, how it was run, took away an opportunity for Sanders to make a last stand, really, in Wisconsin.
We're talking about results of the April 7th elections. Through the hour, our guide is J.R. Ross, editor of WisPolitics. J.R., let's turn our attention to Milwaukee and the re-election of Mayor Tom Barrett to another term. His challenger, State Senator Lena Taylor, had tried to postpone the election through a federal lawsuit. What did you make of the outcome there?
Milwaukee does not turn out incumbent mayors. It just doesn't. It's his fifth term, I believe. He won by 2-to-1 vote margin. Really, he had the money, he had incumbency, he had all these things going for him, and Taylor did not have really the platform to kind of push back in some ways. Don't forget, too, that because of limits on the number of polling sites open in Milwaukee, there are some people who've complained that hurt black turnout that would have possibly helped Taylor. Now, I don't know if it would have made up for a 2-to-1 margin for her loss, but it didn't help turnout in some of these African-American communities to not have as many polling sites open on Election Day.
And then Marcy's Law, the ballots asked voters to approve a constitutional amendment expanding victims' rights, known as Marcy's Law. Were you surprised that the amendment passed?
No, it was basically 3/4 of voters approved it. I mean, there was a concerted effort behind that proposal from the time it got introduced in Madison a lot of money spent lobbying it. There was money put behind TV and radio ads. I saw a TV ad featuring Kelsey Grammer, the actor, talking about his personal experience with how crime impacted his family. There wasn't really an organized effort against the amendment, so it was kind of a foregone conclusion, other than you saw some social media stuff and that kind of thing. It really wasn't a shock to see it pass.
There was some conflict.
Kind of a margin.
Yeah, but there was some conflict, though, around the language of the amendment.
Yes. Yep. But, you know, if you're not following that really closely, if you read it, it, on the surface, sounds like a good thing because it provides more protection for crime victims, right? So if you're not really following that issue, you might just go on the ballot booth and say, well, that looks decent to me. So, but really, again, the public campaign by the people behind that really helped push that the margin that it got with 75% of the vote.
Another election there, the Office of County Executive in Milwaukee, State Senator Chris Larson and State Representative David Crawley battled for that office, Crawley winning. How close was this race?
We were down to about 1,000 votes and change. Now,
wow.
Crawley was leading last night. The interesting thing was, we were, you know, seeing the unofficial returns, and it looked like Crawley had won. What we didn't realize was that because of the number of absentee ballots that were cast, some communities use a central count location where they count the absentee ballots there. Wauwatosa and Franklin had not turned in those absentee numbers yet. So even though the precincts had reported, those ballots weren't factored in. Turned out there were like 17, 20,000 votes still out. So Crawley held up his lead in the end, but it was a little touch and go there for a while. Now the question is, what's Larson going to do? Will he seek a recount? Because that was 1,000 votes and change out of like 190,000 cast in that race. So narrow margin.
Very narrow margin there. As we start to wrap up here, we saw both Wisconsin's U.S. Senators Tammy Baldwin and Ron Johnson call for an investigation into the Postal Service's handling of absentee ballots. What are you watching for there?
What comes of it? You know, it'll be interesting to see how this all came about. And again, I'm interested to see if lawsuits will come, even though this race wasn't close, to try and add some finer points to how this election was run with the absentee ballots. Again, because we are potentially on the knife's edge for November, the presidential race. Imagine if we were the deciding state in November and we had this many issues going on with this election, it could be a nightmare. We could be the Florida of 2000. So it'll be interesting to watch how the Elections Commission, how local officials, how others try to parse through what happened over the last week and a half or 2 weeks and figure out, okay, how do we do it better come November in case we face something similar? Because, again, we don't know when this pandemic is going to be over. We don't know if we're going to have another big push for a mail-in election for the fall. We just don't know. If it comes to pass, how do we do it better than we did this time around?
JR, thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime. Have a great day.
You too. JR Ross, editor of WisPolitics, and we've been talking about the results of the April 7th elections. Just ahead, we'll learn more about racism targeting Asian Americans because of the coronavirus pandemic. And then Attorney General Josh Call is here joining us to discuss how his agency is responding to the state's public health emergency. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show, and you're listening to the Ideas Network.